Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, April the 14th. And today we're going to be chatting with our friend Alan Wall, and we're going to be talking about Mexico, the elections in Mexico, and other things generally that Alan has been covering in his website. So let's say hello to Alan. Alan, welcome. It's always great to have you.
Well, thank you. Great to be on your show again. We've been talking a lot so far this year.
Yeah, well, I think there's something important happening that there's something important in Mexico happening. And I thought, talking a lot about it might, we always enjoy your expertise, of course, and that's why we're doing this. A couple of things from on this day in history that are really fascinating. Just briefly mention this. 1912, that goes back 112 years. The Titanic was sailing across the North Atlantic, and in a couple of hours, around midnight, I guess, it hit the iceberg. So I just thought that was fascinating, that on this day in history. And the other one, on this day in 1865, President Lincoln was shot, and by this time, he was already across the street at that house where they took him. He passed away the next morning around 7. So a couple of big things that happened on April 14th, the Titanic, and of course the assassination, or at least the shooting, he didn't die until the next day, of Abraham Lincoln. So that's, I always enjoy these historical references, Alan.
Yeah, I appreciate you having that on your blog spot. It's good to remind people.
Yeah, I enjoy that so much because what amazes me is that we often, I have always enjoyed it, I've always enjoyed on this day in history type of thing. But I did hear a very funny joke about, not a joke, I guess. I mean, we are talking about an assassination. But I was talking to a friend of mine who said that his grandmother, who was a German descent, when she found out that Abraham Lincoln had gone to see a comedy on Good Friday, she said, well, what was he doing watching a comedy on Good Friday anyway? So I just thought that was kind of a funny, not funny, but just interesting reaction, how some people reacted. But it was Good Friday when President Lincoln was shot. It was indeed Good Friday. Now, maybe they didn't celebrate it the way we celebrate it now. I don't know. And of course, growing up in a Catholic house myself, we were always a lot more dramatic on Good Friday than some of the other denominations. But nevertheless, Abraham Lincoln and the Titanic on this day. Before we get to Mexico, I did want to get your thoughts on this, what we just saw this weekend between Iran and Israel. Iran shot a bunch of missiles or drones or whatever, but 99% of them were shot down, didn't make it. That's not a good day. I mean, I don't know, but if you're the Iranian government, it seems to me you've shown tremendous weakness, Alan.
Well, like you said, 99% did not make it through. Their Iron Dome is working well, and the U.S., the U.K., Jordan was helping them, and not a great average for the, I guess the Iranians were just glad that they were actually able to do anything, but it wasn't really very effective.
No, it really shows, I think, how weak they are. When you think about it, I think it shows how weak they are. I mean, they can do damage, of course. Had they fired those missiles at another country, they probably would have killed a bunch of people. But the Israelis, like you say, they're so well protected. And I don't know how much we did, probably a lot, because we have tremendous equipment. If you remember back during the first Gulf War, when Saddam Hussein started firing those missiles at Israel, that President Bush, basically ordered that they be shot down without getting the Israelis involved, if you remember that.
Right. I remember that. And they weren't very precise at all, but I remember the Palestinians were cheering Saddam on like they didn't realize, hey, those rockets could hit you too.
Right,
But they were still doing it, you know.
Well, it must be the same group that marches saying queers for Palestine. That must be the same group that that marches with that, because man, when I first saw that sign, queers for Palestine, yeah. I thought it was a joke. I mean, I thought somebody was actually like they were doing a Saturday Night Live skit, you know. And it turned out to be true. I mean, they were really people out there marching.
Actually, are with those
signs. Yeah, amazing. Well, one thing that does concern me a little bit, Alan, about this, the events of this weekend, is that I'm surprised about two things. The first one is that President Biden did not address the nation. I thought that was a big mistake. He should have addressed the American nation and said, hey, you know, we're on top of this and we support Israel and so on, and we're going to help them. I thought that was a huge opportunity passed. The other thing is that they leak this conversation that he had with the Prime Minister of Israel, saying that we would not support Israel going into further attacks. I thought that was really bad idea, Alan.
Well, just a speculation. Maybe it's because of a lot of the hard left and a lot of the Palestinian groups in the United States are already angry at Biden. They think he's not pro-Palestinian enough, and they maybe they did it to kind of calm those guys down. I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't either. It made no sense whatsoever to leak such an important conversation with the president of another country. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense leaking that conversation. But I was expecting, you know, Saturday night when this was going on, I was expecting President Biden to at least say something to the nation. He didn't. I was very surprised about that, Alan.
Well, maybe he was asleep. I think he goes to bed early, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. He does. But he does. But I guess sometimes the president has to give late speeches.
Yeah.
Like 8 o'clock in the evening.
So right.
I was a little surprised that he didn't say anything. Well, anyway, let's talk about Mexico. You've been doing some tremendous coverage and reporting of Mexico on your website, Mexico News Report, right? Did I get that right?
That's it. Exactly. Yeah. .com. Mexico,
yeah, that's right. And we have a link to it on the show information. And how is it going? I mean, you've been doing it for a few months. You've been writing and, you know, what's the feedback you've been getting from your readers?
Well, I'm getting getting more readers, and I'm, you know, just trying to build it up slowly but surely. And there's so much information, you know, coming out right now. And there's so much, you know, eventually I want to get a lot more postings. But for now, I'm just slowly building it up. That's, you know, trying to get more readers.
That's the way it works. I mean, you got to slowly build up these things. But I just want to say hello to any of your readers. If they're watching us on your website, keep reading Alan's website.
Thank you.
My recommendation. Well, you wrote a couple of articles this week about the Mexico situation. When do we begin with the Supreme Court? I thought that was really an interesting article. You wrote an article about the Supreme Court in Mexico. My experience over the years is that the Supreme Court in Mexico has generally been a rubber stamp institution, but no more. They seem to have gotten, they like the idea of an independent judiciary. And I think that's a wonderful thing, Alan.
Yes, because like you say, in the old days, it was just a rubber stamp. But, you know, as the in the last few years, it has actually developed some judicial independence. It has ruled against the government several times. And now, of course, the current president, Lopez Obrador, he doesn't really like that, but it does show that they are judicially independent. And there's they have 11 justices with 15-year terms, which I think is interesting. So anyway, it's Lopez Obrador, he wants to change the court and have changed the amount and make a few other changes. But I think they, you know, or that may not work. They may just keep the same system that they have now.
Right. Yeah, I think he wants to pack the court. I think that's what it sounds to me, that he wants to have his own version of packing the court. But I'm glad, you know, I'm glad as an observer of the Mexican situation, I'm glad that the Supreme Court is standing up for an independent judiciary, because that's really what they need. And I mean, that's really what they need. Now, let's talk about the elections. You wrote a post about the debate. I didn't actually watch the debate live, but I've seen the clips and all the reruns. So I think I've seen pretty much all of it. And my initial reaction was that the one man who was there between those two ladies was an absolute waste of time. I have no idea where they found this guy, but I mean, it just, he didn't seem to contribute anything. And the quote that you have in your article about he went after President Trump and, you know, I mean, the guy sounded like, you know, I mean, like just a nutty, you know, a nutty, crazy Democrat. And I lost all respect for that guy as soon as he went into that. I just figured this guy's a nut. I hope he doesn't come back to the next debate. I don't think he's doing very well in the debates anyway, or at least in the polling data, Alan.
Well, he's running in single digits. The last one I saw is 7%. So the debate, I believe, was his opportunity, or he thought, to just, you know, get some attention. Yeah, and, you know, it's like some children, they want attention, whether it's good or bad attention. So he's just trying to get some attention. And he would say things like, you know, there's another option. It's not just these two, but I'm another option. But probably wasn't very successful. But he was, you know, right there in the middle of them. They might actually be better off just having it between the two, you know, front runners, because he took up a lot of time, and there was some problems with their clock. Apparently several of the candidates were complaining about the times. And so we'll see how the next, there's another debate scheduled for the later in the month. We'll see how they do it there.
See how they do it. Maybe they can figure out the clock, but I know that President Lopez Obrador was not happy with some of the questions.
Right.
He thought they were asking too many questions about corruption.
Yeah.
And that, of course, he didn't like that, because he sat there, they were just pointing out all his problems. But did you know that's what usually happens in debates?
Yes.
So I guess he's a little too sensitive. Now, the two ladies who are the front runners, Claudia Sheinbaum and Valdez.
Galvez.
Xochitl, right? Is that her first?
Yeah, I always, Xochitl Galvez.
Galvez, right. Now, I thought it was interesting because on the post that you wrote, the leading candidate, leading meaning she's ahead in the polls right now, she said that when the whole question of immigration came up, she thought that the United States should maybe spend less money on defense and more money helping migrants. And I'm sitting there saying, really? That's gonna be your contribution? You're gonna tell President Trump that next year if you're debating with him on this? I just thought that was so foolish on her. I mean, again, to be honest with her, I only heard that part. I mean, I'm only commenting on the part that you posted, but I thought that was such a silly comment. I mean, as if somehow if we were to spend less money on defense, that we would stop migrants?
Well,
I don't think so.
The thing about her is she's a protege of Lopez Obrador. So she's going to, you know, say the same things he does. And he says things like that also. You know, he talks about root causes. The United States needs to spend $20 billion and, you know, all this stuff. So I think she's following along the same, you know, type of thinking that AMLO has.
Now, what did you think of her delivery? I have to tell you that, you know, I mean, she comes across as a professional, no question about it. But she's such a contrast to López Obrador, who is very energetic and in very much, you know, on, you know, he wants to be on top of everything. And she came across to me, at least, more bureaucratic kind of person, more the kind of person that would run a department, not necessarily a political person. That was my impression. Was that yours?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, you know, nobody's going to be exactly like López Obrador, and he's got the gift of the gab. You know, he gets people's attention. He keeps their attention. But she speaks very differently. She's really a scientist, really, you know, is what she's done much of her life. And so, you know, you can't expect her to have the same type of delivery as AMLO would. And at one point that even came up with Xochitl Galvez said she was very, very harsh with Sheinbaum. And at one point she said, you don't even have the charisma that López Obrador has. She actually, you know, she actually said that.
I think she said she was cold, right?
She said cold that and, twice, at least yeah. twice. You're a cold woman. And she would bring up disasters that had happened in Mexico City, you know, to pin those on her since she was the mayor. And if you think about it, the strategy of Sheinbaum is to continue AMLO's policies. So the strategy of Xochitl Galvez must be to attack AMLO and Sheinbaum.
Right.
And, you know, to provide an alternative. That's her strategy.
I thought that Galvez would have a different strategy. I thought that she would attack López Obrador a lot on the insecurity issue. I thought that she would attack him more for his undemocratic ways and his authoritarian ways. And I think she did a little bit of that, but I don't think she was very effective. I mean, she kind of came across as kind of a super, super happy person, you know, almost like, you know, I don't know, somebody who wants to be the class president or something in high school, you know, vote for me. I've always have a smile in my face kind of thing. And, but I'm just not sure that she was very effective. In fact, the next day I heard a lot of complaints from people saying that she was not effective, that they thought she had missed an opportunity. That's what I heard. I don't know if you heard the same thing.
Well, it partially might depend on the topics that they had. They had, it was education, health, discrimination and inclusion and all that sort of thing. But of course, you know, these candidates, really, they can talk about anything they want, regardless of the topic. So really the security issue ought to be front and center. Unfortunately, it's not.
Well, but I think in all fairness to them, I think that's coming up in another debate, right?
I think so. So hopefully that will get some more attention.
Well, I think, you know, if that's her opportunity, it seems to me, Galvez's opportunity, because,
yes,
I mean, I do think that's a real weakness of the López Obrador administration. So, you know, I also thought, by the way, the third candidate, the man who's running, when he was talking about, you know, that people have a right to migrate and all that kind of stuff, I wonder if he's ever read Mexico's immigration policies.
Oh, probably not.
Yeah, probably not, because my goodness, I mean, I just, you know, I was so unimpressed with him. It was almost, he was a total waste of time. Now, if you're Claudia Sheinbaum, you love to have him back, because he takes up time.
Yes.
And the other reality about the Mexican election is it's, you know, it's based on whoever gets, I mean, a plurality can win.
Plurality, right.
So if he gets 10% of the vote, remember Calderon was elected president with 36% of the vote.
Yes.
In 19 or 2006. So, you know, if you're Sheinbaum, you want him in there.
Yes.
You know, you want him in there because he just takes up a lot of time. And he's not really hurting you, I don't think.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah.
Yeah. So they have another debate, you say, in a few weeks. I heard something from from a good friend in Mexico who is a big supporter of Galvez. In fact, back in December, he was the one person who told me that Galvez was a great candidate. And I was speaking with him a couple of days ago, and I said, what do you think of the debate? And he said, well, Claudia is going to win. So he was almost like throwing in the towel. And he was a strong supporter of Galvez. So I don't know if this debate, if a lot of people are sort of resigning to the fact that Claudia Sheinbaum is going to win. That I kind of get that impression, Alan.
Could be, yes, could be.
Now, I also heard another thing, too, about Claudia Sheinbaum, that she has very leftist roots. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, yeah. I mean, and of course, that's how she's AMLO's protege. Apparently, he wanted her to be the candidate.
And I guess he did, yeah.
Yeah.
And what do you hear about her performance? I guess she's not mayor of Mexico City, but governor of Mexico. I mean, it used to be a city or a federal district, right? And then it became a state. What are you hearing about her performance as governor or mayor of what used to be Mexico City, Alan?
Well, it's controversial, of course. Her Xochitl Galvez wanted to show a lot of problems. You know, there's always problems in Mexico City. And so she talked about the problem with the subway and, you know, other problems. And of course, a supporter of Sheinbaum is going to give her good marks. So I think that, you know, that's going to go either way. That probably is going to depend on people's, political orientation, you know, how they're going to rate her time in that post.
Yeah. To my knowledge, no mayor of Mexico City before had ever won the presidency. I mean, it's a very difficult job being the mayor of Mexico City.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I mean, because you have so many problems. First of all, for people who may not be familiar with Mexico City, you're talking about 15 million people. And you're talking about traffic problems like you've never seen before. Yeah. And just the infrastructure. I mean, I'll be honest with you, Alan. I'm amazed that it works as well as it does.
Right. And now they get this big water problem, you know.
Yeah.
Getting water for the city is getting more and more difficult.
Because of droughts or because of...
Partially. And the aquifers going down, you know, and their water sources, they just have less water. It's a big problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that they've had that problem to some extent before.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought they were going to blame it on climate change.
I'm sure they are. Yeah. In fact, Claudia Sheinbaum, you know, has been involved in climate change. She actually was part of a working group that got the Nobel Prize. But not that she individually got it, but you know, it was about climate change. So she's already involved in that, or has been in her scientific career.
Well, I don't know how many Mexicans are concerned about climate change. I think they're more concerned about traffic in Mexico City. But, you know, it did surprise me a little bit, Alan, wrapping up the debate. I was a bit surprised that that's the best Mexico can do. You know, given how much talent there is in Mexico, that these are the two best people that they have at this point. I'm a little surprised about that. It has nothing to do with the fact that they're women. I know that's not what I mean. It's just that neither one of them seems very impressive to me. Let's say compared to López Obrador, who I don't like, but he's a gifted politician. Or even Vicente Fox, I didn't like him, but he was a gifted politician. Calderon was a very decisive guy, whatever you think of him, but he was very decisive. He came across in a very forceful way. But I didn't see that. I didn't sense that from these two ladies. I don't know about you.
Well, yeah, like the politicians you mentioned, they whatever you think about their policies, they have a vision for the country. They have a definite ideas, definite proposals. Yeah, with these two, it's kind of weak, you know. But they're the front runners, so, you know,
No, that's all they mean. That's what, yeah, well, that's what they have. It's going to be one of these two ladies, that's for sure. But I thought the third guy, I forgot his name. What is the name of the third
guy? Jorge Alvarez Mañez.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, I thought Jorge was a joke. And I really, I thought he had this great opportunity to shine in front of these two people. And maybe he picked up a few votes, but I don't think he's going to be very consequential. Well, anything else you want to mention, Alan, before we wrap up about the debate or Mexico?
Well, one thing, I watched the whole debate, and man, it was intense. I mean, there were no breaks. There were no commercials. It was almost 2 hours just straight talking and a lot of details. But one thing I did notice about all three candidates, promises, promises, promises. I mean, they were promising the moon and the sun and the stars and all these government programs. Almost no mention whatsoever of the creation of wealth, which we know that politicians love to, divvy up the wealth. They love to expropriate the wealth. But the question is, how does this society create wealth? That concept was only mentioned one time in the whole debate and just in passing. I think that's a big oversight, too.
I think so. And that would have been, again, another great opportunity for Galvez. I thought another great opportunity, too, an issue that Mexico is going to have to confront is the situation with energy. I mean, their energy company is basically going out of business. They don't have any more oil, or they don't have the ability to find any more oil or explore or whatever the right word is, because they don't have any money. And, they can't just depend on exporting avocado or automobile parts. Oil always, I mean, exporting oil was always a steady source of income for them. But they're running out of oil in Mexico, not because they don't have any underground, but because they have no way, I guess, no money to go in and get it out, Alan.
Right.
I can't think of the word for that right now. I'm blanking out on the word.
Extraction.
But that's a big issue, I think.
It is. Because Petróleos Mexicanos, the problem is they don't run it like an oil company. They run it as a source of revenue for the government. And they need to run it like an oil company. But, politically, that it's very difficult to do that.
Yeah, I mean, at one time I remember a story that said that they were the most inefficient oil company in the world. That, for every barrel of oil, they spent so much, and the cost of doing business was so high that they were so inefficient. But they've always opposed any reforms.
Right.
And you would think that at some point they're going to have to do something. The other issue, too, that didn't come up, maybe it'll come up later, is the question of these remittances that are now $62 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard in the past politicians talk about, using that money to invest in the country or whatever. But it just seems to me that the $62 billion are simply subsidizing families in Mexico who, yes, I guess, put, they don't really do anything constructive with it. And I think that's a bad idea.
Oh, yeah. The remittances. But it creates a perverse incentive for the government to, tacitly encourage immigration so they can continue to receive the remittances.
Right.
The country can, still receive it.
Well, this, $60 billion is actually making the peso pretty strong, which is another concern, because I think right now the peso may be a little too strong, which would actually hurt their exports and their tourism. But I mean, look, it's always complicated when you're running for president. But I didn't see any candidates there that I thought were very inspiring. They were basically just replaying the same nonsense that we've heard before. So I don't see any inspirational figures. I, And I do believe Claudia Sheinbaum, who I do think is going to be elected by all the evidence I have, I think she may have a hard time governing because the country is bitterly divided. And she's not an inspirational figure who's going to be able to bring people together. I mean, she's going to play the historic I am woman type of thing for a while. But I think after a while, that'll just basically play out. I mean, there have been other female presidents in Latin America, in Chile, in Argentina. Yeah. I think one in Peru. Well, there is one in Peru right now. And I think there was one in Chile. So I think in Central America, I think there's another one too. And I think so after a while that, you know, historic I am. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. After a while, it gets a little old. People want people want results, you know. So, but anyway, Alan, thank you so much as always. And if we may count on you again in a few weeks, we love these Sunday night chats with you. And we really appreciate the work you do and the information you provide us. It's absolutely great, Alan.
Well, thank you. It's great to be on your show again.
Thank you so much. Have a good week. And my best to your family. And we will check your email. You might get another email from me in the form of an invitation.
Okay.
For another chat. Thank you so much. Have a great Sunday night and a great week, Alan.
Thanks.
Our good friend, Alan Wall. Alan has a website about Mexico, has been writing about Mexico for a long time. And so that's why we check with him to get some perspectives on what's happening down there. They have an election coming up and they're into it right now. I didn't bring this up with Alan. Maybe we'll talk about it the next time, but they've had a bloody election. They've had 14 candidates who've been killed already in this election. So it's been a tough election for candidates, particularly the small town mayors, not the big politicians because they have more security, but I'm talking about mayors and small towns. Those have been very vulnerable to violence, and that's not a good thing. Well, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful evening, everybody. Have a wonderful Sunday night. And this is Silvio Canto in Dallas saying goodbye, and we'll talk again. Bye-bye, everybody.